All right, guys, so the title of our workshop is Am I Hiding or Am I Helping? So could I please have Suzanne?
Attic name Suzanne.
Suzanne.
I'm going to split the time with my buddy Scott, so say I'll do 30, he'll do 30. All right. Wow, this is so cool to like see so many people, not familiar faces. I get all in my head. I'm an addict. I'll be all self-centered, which reminds me. Whew. I always like to do this before I share. If we could all just take a second to invite our higher power into the room. I'm an addict. It'll be all about me. And I like take a minute to invite my higher power in so that I might share what my higher power would want me to share, not just what I would want to share. Ideally, they'd be the same thing. You never know. And take a second to invite your higher power in that you might hear something you need to hear today, either from me or another speaker or this awesome convention. Whew, okay. That just always helps me get really centered. I heard that the entire title was called, like, service work, am I hiding or helping? So to put that in a context, it's pretty sure I'm super self-centered because I'm an addict. I was pretty sure they, like, picked it for me. They were all sitting down and be like, who should we get to speak? Suzanne, oh, my God, she is totally addicted to service. We're kind of unhealthy, right? So we'll have this thing be about her. Like, we'll make this topic for her. Or they were like, hey, here's a great topic, service work. Are we hiding or helping? Dude, get Suzanne. She's kind of, like, sick, addicted to service, right? Like, service work can be really helpful. Like, it's awesome, but it can be also very addictive. Like, we're doing it. We're helping other people and avoiding our own recovery. So just to back up, I always do, like, experience, strength, and hope meetings. So I'm used to doing my story, like, chronologically, so that's what I'm used to. I like to tie it into the theme, which is service work, am I hiding or helping? But I grew up in Baltimore County. I had two parents. Grew up, you know, my parents did the best with what they could with what they had. Today I'm very grateful. Back then I was very resentful. I believe I was an addict before I picked up. La la la. I grew up in this environment of, and I only say this because there's obviously a theme to this meeting, but I only say this because I was thinking on the way here about, you know, why do I want to help so much? And what is this, like, very unhealthy, like, it's like codependence. I'm not sure if people are familiar with that word. There's another fellowship all about I'm powerless over other people. I find myself a lot trying to help other people, trying to save other people. And it's definitely that thing, like, it can be an asset or a defect. It can be an asset, makes me compassionate, sympathetic, empathetic, caring, makes me, you know, reach out to the newcomer, it makes me carry the message to the newcomer, but at the same time, if an extreme, I can definitely hide from my own recovery. My husband, a couple days ago, was like, you know, Suzanne, we need you here at home, not trying to save the newcomer. So it's definitely something that's super relevant to my own life. But I grew up in this environment, I think a lot of guilt, I think a lot of, you know, we have to help people, we have to, so I was thinking, you know, why do I reach out so much, and why do I try, and I'm so afraid of, you know, what if someone falls through the cracks? What if someone relapses? What if someone dies? And I feel like, oh, I didn't reach out. So I was just thinking about what made my beginning kind of have to do with that. But I graduated high school, picked up. I lived on a farm, so I just honestly literally did not pick up. I was not exposed to anything. I lived on a farm. My parents scraped together money. We went to private school across town for like 12 years. So I didn't have a neighborhood. I didn't have friends. I wasn't exposed to anything. But when I went to college, I was off to the races. Graduated from college and entered the work world. I'm super grateful. I have a, you know, great career, makes a zillion dollars, but I was really unhappy. I'm not sure if anyone else is familiar with it's like corporate America. And I would just be trying to organize happy hours and sleep with everyone and, like, how do you call it? Have all my coworkers do drugs with me. So I tried geographic relocation, that didn't work. In the end, I found a guy, my Mr. Wonderful, I'm sure no one else can relate to that, in a bar, on a bar stool next to me. We moved in together that day, and 33 days later got pregnant. So my pregnancy, I didn't use very much, that's definitely my higher power, not me. She came out fine, but I was off to the races. The end of my story, my using, was my bottom, was that I dropped her on the floor. She was 10 months old, my family had already had an intervention, which didn't work, and then, I dropped on the floor because I was high and I thought she snapped her neck and she was just laying there. And I did this thing called a jackpot prayer, which you hit your knees and, you know, God, it's not even religious. If you're new, it's not a religious program at all. It doesn't matter where you came from, whatever. But I did this jackpot prayer, like, God, please help me. My family had an intervention which didn't work, but our compromise was I would start seeing a therapist. So my baby came too, and then my next appointment with my therapist, who I trusted and who cared for me unconditionally, I let her know what had happened, and she said, you know, Suzanne, you need help. And I was all, you know, my baby daddy's an alcoholic, who's going to take care of my baby, all self-centered, and she said, then you need to go to Narcotics Anonymous. And I was so scared. I think a lot what brought me here, what keeps me here, and I was so scared of accidentally hurting one of my kids for real, and then my family realized what a problem I had, that I, you know, the next day was in my first meeting, and that's the beginning of my journey here. Relapse has not been a part of my story. I realized, you know, all we all have today, I realized we're only one step away, so I don't take that for granted, but I just say that that was 15 years ago. I just celebrated 15 years a couple months ago, and that is, again, just my higher power. So I came in. I'm really grateful I took suggestions. I think if you're new, I'm super, super, super big on the tools, so I'm just going to take 1 second and do a super big plug for the tools. I'm really excited about this because we get our tools the day we come in, right? We don't have to be here for a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years. It's always the same tools, and you get them day one. So I'm talking right now to the newcomer. If you're the newcomer, you're the most important person in the room. Newcomer, okay, you get tools are like, you know, read the literature, go to a meeting, raise your hand, introduce yourself, share, think about getting a sponsor, get a sponsor, think about a relationship with a higher power. Don't pick up, obviously, get a home group, all that kind of stuff, okay? So there's like 10 suggestions, whatever. And that's day one, we get them. And if we have time, if we have a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years, it's not, oh, I got new tools. It's always the same friggin' tools. Are we allowed to curse here? I don't know if we're allowed to curse. Yes. Okay. So it's always the same tools, right? And I love that. I love that even today, I had a time a couple months ago, my job was making my life completely unmanageable, and I wanted to use, I made a really big, I'm called an accountant, we don't have to talk about it because it's boring, but I made a really big, like $300,000 mistake at work, and I was scared to tell my boss, and so I was going to quit. And so I was going to drive across town, I was working remotely at home, I'm going to drive across town. And this was 2 months ago, I'm just saying it to illustrate my point of tools, is that I started driving across town to my office building where our stuff was still, even though we're not there anymore, and I was going to clean out my cubicle, and it was a Tuesday night, and I honestly got so scared. I had just celebrated 15 years, so it's not like I was some expert, but I was so scared that I was going to take a detour or drive off a bridge, because I was so much in pain. And I'm really grateful. I pulled my car over. I called my sponsor. She didn't pick up. She was busy. I called my old sponsor. She didn't pick up. She was busy. I called one of my sponsees who I'm super tight with. And that's fine. That's why we have a network, right? I mean, I don't resent meds. That's just what we do. And my best friend, she was in her home group on Zoom. So I called her. I mean, I didn't call her. I'm sorry. I jumped and crashed her home group right on Zoom and slobber, like cried and made it through. But my point is just I always like to talk about the tools because, you know, I think the program is perfect. I think we can mess it up because we're human. You can look at me and talk to me, listen to me, and be like, you know, excuse me, yeah, that's fucked up or whatever. I believe the program is perfect. So I just always like to talk about the tools for 1 second. And I used the tools that night. I shared. I reached out. I called people. I prayed. And I was able to make it through, which I'm really grateful for. So I always just like to do a big plug for the tools. But so I came in, I got the tools, I took suggestions, I did not a 90 and 90, I did 67 and 90, because I'm super important, I have a baby, there's no way I can make 90 meetings and that's insane. I got a home group, I got a sponsor right away, she put me on the steps, stuff like that, okay? Then I was like, wow, there's like, they said, get a position, serves, right? Now, it's such a fine line, okay? So I really want to talk about, it can be so good, right? I got a little position, it was key tagged, okay? So I have a couple of months clean. When I came in, I'm sure no one else can relate, my car, it had been called, it's repossessed. It's when you don't pay for it and they take it away. I had no car for 28 months, the first 28 months of my recovery. I came in, you guys talked about being homeless, and I was like, oh, you poor people, that's horrible. And they were like, yeah, where are you living? I was like, oh, my sister's so fucked. And they're like, that's called homeless living with your family. I was like, oh shit, that's true. I had my little baby. I got clean in Baltimore on Hartford Road. I just wheeled my baby up and down Hartford Road with her stroller. But anyway, we say get a home group. I'm so grateful I'm in Baltimore and there's like 5 million meetings a week or there were before COVID, whatever. So I got a home group at the end of my street and I would go every Sunday night, right? So I'd be on my sofa, and I got a little position called key tags, and I was like, well, I better go. Who's going to give out the key tags if I don't go? I better go. They need me. And it was really good, right? It made me feel important. It made me feel part of. I'm sure old-timers might relate. I don't want to use names, but there was a family in my home group, right? It was a mom and a dad and a son. They all had like 10 years. And a little toxic looking back, and I was so excited. Like, they were just like the perfect family. I put people on pedestals, and I was like, oh my God, these people are perfect. I want to be in their family. And they would have like screaming matches in group conscience about like personal shit, or like one of them was treasurer and they had a business, and they'd be like locking it in the safe and talking about like all this shit in group conscience and like screaming from around the room. And I was like, oh my God, they're perfect. I wish I was in their family. So I got this little service position. I did that, okay? So that was my first year. My first year, it was awesome, right? My baby daddy got another fellowship, and we got things, right? We got a little job. We got relations with our family. We got relations with our kid. I had been pregnant, no connection with my kid at all. So we started getting connections with our kids. Okay, after a year, my baby daddy decided he wanted to be with someone else, and he ran off with her, and I was by myself, okay? And I was pretty sure I was going to die. Definitely did not stay clean, but I used, again, the tools. I'm sorry, I'm really trying not to do a tools meeting. I'm trying to do a meeting about service work. But, I reached out. I used the stupid phone book because you guys taught me, like, if I use the phone book, you know, I'm really stubborn and I wanted to go cop, but it's not going to be my fault. It's going to be all your stupid people's fault because your stupid phone doesn't work, so I'll show you it doesn't work. So I call this lady. I get home from my little job, put my baby in her swing, and curl up in a fetal position on the living room floor, and call this first lady, right? She didn't answer. I was like, that bitch. She said she would, but she's not going to answer. I knew she's a bitch anyway. Then lady number two, I call her, and her phone was busy. I leave a message or whatever. Lady number three, same thing. And then while I'm calling lady four, lady number one called me back to talk to her. And then while we're on the phone, lady number three called me back. And then don't you know, it's midnight, I made it through another day clean. And I did that for 6 weeks straight. After 6 weeks, the baby daddy got that girl pregnant, didn't want to be with her, so we tried to come back. And I was just strong enough, no ego, but just strong enough. Like, I think I'm trying to save my life for our baby. I don't think we're on the same path. He freaked out, he relapsed. My sponsor helped me to get a restraining order, which was nuts. I'd never heard of that before. So anyway, then I got into service work, right? Got an unhealthy relationship, so I had this place to stay. Took a dude hostage in his house for a couple years, but that's beside the point. I started doing service work, okay? So I started doing area service. I started doing H&I. I started doing all these things to, it just felt really good, right? So there's such a fine line. It felt really good. I started sponsoring people. So this is what I want to talk about. I started sponsoring people. I want to be super honest. My husband's not here, but he, it's been a journey. He is an addict. I have 15 years clean. He has 9 years clean. We're very different. I'm very book smart, not street smart at all. He's very like sold drugs for 10 years, super street smart, not book smart. So we got together and I am sponsoring people, right? So I want to be really honest. I was new to sponsoring people and I did things. I made my life unmanageable. So things I'm talking about is trying to save newcomers. Okay, I drive them all around with my little, I think I had a Blazer. Like, you know, SUV, drive them all around, going to meetings. I started doing like the kind of things where like I would take these flyers for events to work, and then I would take the flyers and distribute them at meetings, and I wouldn't even be going to the meetings. I'd just like pop in and be like, here's flyers, and drop them off and just like run around town doing that, but not actually going to actual meetings. Things like, I just want to be really honest because it's an honest program and I'm fine about saying embarrassing things if it'll help other rooms like to compare in or whatever. I did this thing where like I would have a newcomer, right? And she'd be like, I'm on, what do we call it? Xanax, and I'm not allowed to keep it in my house. My house manager says we can't keep it out. So can I keep it in your glove box? I'm like, sure. And then my husband's like driving my car and he's backing up, it's called, I've never been to prison, but he said he's backing up 15 years, which meant he could get in a lot of trouble. And he's like driving the minivan. He's like, what the fuck, Suzanne? Like, we can't have like someone else's Xanax in our glove box. Like, I'm backing up 15 years. And I was like, okay, so that's bad. We won't do that anymore. Okay. Or like, this is a really good one also. I would pay money for people. Right now, I'm not rich. I just make regular money. But I would like, there was a family, this isn't even NA, but a family, a local family was just getting started in the area and I would take their kids out to Walmart and like buy them clothes and then I couldn't pay my BGE bill. So I'm talking about that like taking it to an extreme, but like this feels good, I wanna help people, I wanna, you know, make people feel a part of, I wanna make, and I think sometimes, okay, why is that? Like, did I grow up feeling like no one cared about me, so I want other people to feel like someone cares about, I don't know what it is, but I'm not gonna try to figure out here while I'm talking. So I'm talking about that, like year two and year three, like kind of taking it to an extreme. and my husband pointing things out to me. You know, things like meeting someone at a meeting and her being like, I'm new. And I'm like, okay, cool. Do you have a home group? She's like, no. I'm like, you have a sponsor? And she's like, well, no. I'm like, okay, I'll be your sponsor. Don't worry. That's done. Let's check that out. You know what I mean? And like, no, like letting her look for her own sponsor and then being frustrated, like, you know, like I force things kind of. So that's kind of what I'm trying to say. So that was like year two and year three. All right, let me think real quick because I want to let my buddy Scott talk. So that was year two and year three. Service work. So by then, I think I got together with my husband. I'm just trying to think about that time in my life. We got together. I had by then like a 6-year-old. She was like six. He brought, I think, 1 or 2 year old to the relationship, and he also brought a stepdaughter to the relationship. So we got together, and he brought those kids to the relationship, and then we started our life together. I continued doing like area service. I think I was like the secretary. I was doing H&I. And one other thing is like, so we come to NA with skills, right? So I am a business nerd. I have like 4 million contacts in my phone. You know, like just for example, to be honest, I have like 300 women right now that I try to keep in touch with, just like a monthly little text or like, you know, just thinking of you or whatever. But so at that time, so I'm a nerd, right? So I'm totally like a nerd, but it works well. Like say I came to area service in like my fourth or my fifth year and I'm doing like, okay, I'm making these cool like templates that like H&I can use when they do their report. And oh yeah, look, I'm also doing the one for phone line, so they'll have one. And then I'm also doing one for here. And then, but I'm not really spending time with my family. Or it got to that I was driving people to meetings, but I would just like drop them off and go home and help the kids and then pick them up. And my husband's like, you know, you don't really actually go to the meeting. And I was like, well, that's a good point, but I'm helping so many people, like that. So at the end of the day, my sponsor put me in lockdown. I was not allowed to sponsor anybody anymore because it was making my life unmanageable. I got pregnant with my husband and he said, you know, babe, I love you, but you're pregnant. And I really think we need to pause in the area of service for a little while. We just really need to kind of like help our family, you know. So I paused on that. My sponsor put me in lockdown. I was not allowed to sponsor people for like 5 years. And that was a little bit convenient because, you know, people ask me, I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't do it. I focus on my family. So for the past few years, let's see, 5, 10, I was not sponsoring people. We were building our life at home, I've been working, stuff like that. So recently I started sponsoring people again for the first time. So I want to talk about where I've grown, I think, is that also I know it's an NA meeting, but there are other fellowships that help me with like my codependence or they help me with like I'm powerless over other people. One thing is that I used to want to like foster kids, right? Like I just feel bad for these kids out there. But what happened is that I had to talk to myself about that because to be honest, my husband's 2 kids, their mom has been gone for 9 years on a run. And I had to be honest that like, you know, I'm raising those kids that aren't mine. And kind of talk myself out of like fostering additional kids. But I didn't tell my husband about fostering kids, so we don't talk about that. But I'm raising those 2 kids that aren't mine, right? So that I feel like is service work. So I recently started sponsoring people again and started jumping into service work again. I don't really think about it, right? Like I've been treasurer for this. We have another retreat. It's called the Northeast Freedom Area Spiritual Retreat. And it's been canceled for 2 years, but I've been treasurer for that for a few years. So that by itself, if we say, okay, you're in NA, you know, be of service, like get a position. You know, don't pick up, go to meetings, literature, stuff like that. I have one position, which is spiritual retreat treasurer. I've been doing it for like 3 years, even though it's always canceled. Okay, but then I'll like also sponsor people. Then for my home group, I'll also get a position. And I'll just forget and like extend myself. So I want to talk about 2 more things. One is, I can't remember. The other one that so sponsorship this time around. So a year ago, I switched sponsors. A year and a half ago, I switched sponsors. And then someone asked me to sponsor them. So I went to my new sponsor and I said, I just want to be honest with you. I feel like I've really worked on my codependence issues. Someone asked me if I could sponsor them. And I feel guilty, right? I want to be able to say yes. I don't want to feel like I'm stealing from the program, even though I have 9 positions I forget about. But I want to feel like I'm giving back, right? And she said, okay, well, it's really up to you. You have a good amount of time clean. I think it's up to you to think about. So I thought about it, and I started my journey with this one sponsee who has like 6 years clean. And it's been really cool. I promised myself this time around that I would just be available, right? I can't be calling all the sponsees. I can't be, you know, tracking them down. I can't be driving them around. I got 4 kids at home. Like, I need to have a balance. So I promised myself this time I would just be available. I did go ahead and set up a little sponsorship family Zoom meeting on Saturday afternoons and another one on Sunday evening. So that's kind of like a little crazy sometimes because, you know, it's a commitment. I also, this past year, I want to talk about this. I'm just really trying to be honest, and I've not mastered it at all. I obviously can still make my life unmanageable. This past year, or year and a half, since we've all been on COVID, I really do think I would have relapsed at home by myself with all these kids working from home. But I found this meeting, which is called a 24/7 online Zoom meeting, an AMA. So it was awesome, right? Like, you can sit there and it's all day. It's literally been running for like 18 months straight. It's never stopped. But again, the compulsion, like be of service. They're like, so all the time you can go in there, it's either between 90 and 130 people. It's a big chunk of people from all around the world. And they'd be like, you know, newcomer Susie is like, oh, I'm like, oh, like sad and upset. I'm trying to stay single. And they're like, everyone who can, women with more than 90 days, put your number in the chat. And I'm like, here's my number, Susie. Like, and I've been doing it so much, right? And it feels good because it can be of service. But I really want to say this right. I don't want to be judgmental. There was a couple wackadoodles that I ran across. So, wackadoodles is not the right word. Unhealthy, right? We're all in different stages of unhealthy. Just want to be super honest about, because I was trying so hard to be of service, and it was a little distracting from my actual job that I'm doing, right? And I didn't have to do that. It just feels like obsession compulsion. So, you know, I was of service to a lot of people. I got a handful of sponsees that I like to think I was available for. One lady, I want to say this right, I'm not being judgmental. I suffer from mental health. I feel like I'm medicated. I'm doing a good job being medicated and taking my prescription. One lady was in New Jersey, and she had mental health issues, and maybe she was not medicated. And I just, every day, on the phone with her for 30 minutes, she was, what do you call it when you stay in your house, agoraphobic, I don't know if that's it, but she stayed in her house. So I'm online with her every day, and she's, oh, I'm going to kill myself today, da, 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 and every day I'm on the phone with her, da, da. So after 2 months, she was, I don't know, 60 years old, and I started being like, you know, I can see you're in your house. I'd really like to keep getting to know you, and we have a weekend coming up. I'd like to drive up and see you. And she had only gotten clean on Zoom, and, or online, we're not supposed to say Zoom, online. And she said, oh, that sounds nice. She said, I need a winter coat. And I was like, well, I'll take you out and buy a winter coat. So, you know, a week went on, and she's like, I don't understand, why are you coming up here? And I said, well, it's just what we do in NA, right? It's 2 hours, it's no big deal, I'll drive up, you know, I'll get to see you. And then maybe I took a wrong turn. I said, she was like, I don't know, I don't feel comfortable with that. And I was just trying to make light of it or make a joke. And I was like, well, I'll just come around and walk around the neighborhood. And if you feel like it, you can come out and walk with me. And kind of joking. So a few days later, one of the people from the meeting is like, calls me. He's like, you know, she's, yeah, this lady's talking about how you're stalking her. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, Suzanne, I just want to let you know. She shared in the meeting that you're a stalker, and she feels really uncomfortable, and you're going to come see her and stalk her. And I was like, wow. And he's like, you know, Suzanne, I feel like I know you pretty well from doing service work together, and I've tried to tell this lady, like, she's really not like that. Suzanne's not like that. And I was like, what the fuck? And, you know, and I mean, I was just trying to explain to her that's how NA is, right? I had 28 months with no car. People drove me to meetings. But, you know, for a lady who's 60, she's never been to in-person meeting, she doesn't know, you know, I just have to see that maybe she thought I was a stalker. So she found another fellowship to be a part of, I guess. I don't know what happened to her, but that was one. And then the other one, and then I just want to talk about, I'm just not rambling, but I'm just talking about how I take it to an extreme. I'm trying to be honest about how it is a fine line. And it's not, well, yeah, the point of this topic is I'm hiding from my recovery. So I'll be honest and say I haven't done step work for a year, okay? Because I'm being of service. I'm helping people. And I'm doing, you know, steps with sponsees. I'm just trying to be honest because I feel like they made this topic for me. And then I guess they invited Scott because he's a good speaker too. But this topic is perfect for me. So the other one I ran into was a girl who was struggling. And I'll be honest, I have mental health issues. I'm supposed to take my anxiety medicine. You know, I have two pills, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. If I don't take them, the first part of the day, I'll be like happy, and by the end of the day, I'm crying, and I'm really anxious. And I have tics, bite my mouth and like make weird faces and stuff. And the less I take my medicine, or if I forget, or I'm working a computer on this project, I forget. So one of my sponsees, I've been with her a couple months, she was struggling. She texted me one morning, and she's like, I think you need to be honest with everyone. And I was like, hey, babe, not sure if that message was for me. Send it to me. Think you meant someone else. She was like, yeah, I'm talking to you. I watched you all day over the weekend, on Saturday and Sunday, on the meeting, and you're obviously using. And I was like, no, this is Suzanne. Suzanne from Baltimore. Not sure who you're talking to. And she was like, yeah, you're making all these weird faces, and you look, everyone can tell you're using, so just come clean. And I was like, wow, okay, I'll think about it. Thanks for letting me know. And then I like laid in bed and I was like, okay, let me just think. I had this job that was making me crazy. I worked all weekend on my computer. I forgot to take my medicine. That's what I did. I was working and forgot to take my medicine. I have my video on. That's just me because I feel confident enough that I have some time clean and I want newcomers to see their people, faces. And I left it on. I could picture working and making faces. And I said, you're totally right. I didn't take my medication Saturday till late, Sunday till late. And I text. And you're totally right. I'm going to remember to take my medication each when I'm supposed to. That thank you for the reminder. And I was proud of myself, like Ray, like I was like, bitch. And and she's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. I can't believe I said all that. And then I did go a little bit like, does she need everyone to tell? Like, does Bob think that means there's all these people in the meeting? I was like, no, I think she's just in her head. And then like the next day she shared that she was still actively using, so that made me feel like, you know, maybe she was projecting or something. But the last thing I want to talk about, so that was kind of this past year and taking that service work to an extreme, and I do feel like I was of service, but also can make my life a little bit unmanageable. So I just want to be honest about that. The last thing that I'm struggling with, and I really want to be honest about this because it's a journey for me. Oh, it's going to make me cry. I understand now, after 15 whole years of recovery, I do understand that I can't save addicts, right? Like, I'm powerless. I can be available as best I can be. I can, you know, ask them. You think about home group, you think about sponsor, I can just be an example and give them tools. That's all I can do. But my new project is the children of addicts. I will try and, like, for 2 years I've been doing this, so. I have a 15-year-old, or I have a 16-year-old. She was my first birth kid. My 17-year-old stepdaughter. I say stepdaughter, but it was my husband's stepdaughter. She honestly has no parents. They're both in active addiction, and she's being raised by her grandma. She shares a birth mother with one of our kids, so she's in our family. And we take her on all our vacations. We have her every weekend like that. So last year before COVID, my 16-year-old lives in my house with me, and she has friends in the neighborhood and school. So many of these kids have, like, at least one addict parent, right? So I'm rounding them all up each weekend. I'm taking them all to Alateen in my minivan, like, every weekend like that. I'm trying to show up in their life. I'm, you know, giving them little cash for their birthday, like, you know, inviting them over to the house. I am asking about their grades. I'm giving them money for good grades. Like, I am just really trying to show up for these kids because it is really sad and it's a journey. I haven't figured this one out yet, but it's really, I got two teenage boys in my life. One is his dad's in the Army, a lot of mental health issues, really unhappy man. And this kid, he's 16, he's a really hard worker, he's a really good kid. And his mom left when he was 4, and he thought that she's been dead his whole life. And she just found him on social media, is an addict and still an addict. So, you know, so I've been, they're in 11th grade now. I've been inviting him over since he was in 5th grade, you know, tutoring him at my house, asking him about all stuff. My husband's like, who is this kid who's here? I don't even know these kids in my house. Who are these children? We have a lot of children, Suzanne, and then we have more kids. Who are these people in our house? So that kid I've been having inviting over since he was in 5th grade. And then this other boy, same situation, his parents are both out, active addiction, being raised by his grandma. And And it's a control thing, right? It's a character defect that I'm trying to be in control. I'm so scared for them, right? That kid doesn't have a choice of what family he's been born into. I'm grateful my two kids in my house that their mom's on a run for 10 years. You know, they have a house and we do vacations and traditions and we do, you know, a stable environment. But I'm trying to extend that to these kids. So I'm going to be honest, last week, I'm going to shut it down in a minute. I took this one for his learner's permit, right? So it's me, like, hey, we're going to get your learner's permit. Come on, grandma's not doing it. She can't do it. Your parents are grown. Let's do it, like, kind of forcing the situation, right? I'll pay the $50. Don't worry. We need to get you a learner. Like, this poor kid, I don't want him to feel less than, right? And that's just me and my control issues. So I take him, and the grandma gives me the papers, but she doesn't have a document that says she's a guardian, because she's not. And so I take him, right? And we get there. And they say, okay, can we have your documents? And the lady says, Mom, show me your license. And I say, here's my license. And then I think her next step is to compare the license with the birth certificate. So I say, I'm not his mom. His mom's in rehab. I'm taking care of him. So the lady stops the whole process. She's like, we can't do this. And I'm like, okay, what can we do? And she said, we need the mother or the father and their ID. And I was like, okay, got it, thank you. We'll try again next week, right? We will figure it out, go get the mom from rehab. I'm forcing situations, right? So I leave, and this kid is like, I do not want to talk to you now. I am so livid with you. I was like, excuse me. And he's like, why would you say that? Why would you just volunteer that information? So I'm sure no one else is familiar. Teenagers think they, like, know everything. So this kid thinks, like, if I had let it slide, she would have just, like, not looked and just let him get his learner's permit. I think I'm a grown-up and I can picture them checking. So I kind of, like, I don't know, said that. He's very angry with me. He hasn't spoken with me since. Me, I should be like, okay, I'm just going to let him breathe, whatever. I'm like, okay, I got you a new appointment. Let's try again next week. So I'm trying so hard to be of service that I am avoiding my own recovery. I'm trying to force the situation. I don't know. I just want to be honest about that lately. My husband is not into service work at all. He's been here for 9 years, and he does not do it. I like to tell him he's stealing from NA, but that's not my place to tell him that. I was proud of him last week. His yoga instructor said that she was in, like, a regular earthling environment, said she was in recovery. And he, for the first time ever in 10 years, was like, I'm going to help you. Here's my wife's phone number. And I was really proud of him because he's never done that before. But when I say, hey, babe, listen to this situation that happened at the learner's permit, he's like, why the fuck do you help all these people stand like that? So I know there's a happy medium between, like, we don't have to help anyone. All we have to help is the people in this house. And me trying to help everyone, but I'm still learning. So I'm trying to explain how service work can be, you know, healthy and then unhealthy, hoping that you can see that me avoiding my own recovery, it all ties together, and I do feel, I mean, I have stayed clean. I've not worked on my step work, which my sponsor is like, you know, could help if you did the steps, but just giving you suggestions, Suzanne. So I like to be honest and share that in hopes that, you know, the way home I'll keep thinking about it and come to my own conclusions. I appreciate them inviting me to think about myself and to just be honest about my experience for anyone else who might be thinking about it in their life. I think that's it. I really am excited to hear my buddy Scott speak. Thanks for my share.
Thank you, Suzanne. That was a really good meeting. Really good share. So exactly, what is the first title of it?
I think it's service work, am I helping or hiding?
Okay. So, all right, now I'm going to ask Scott to come up and share his experience with service work. Am I helping or am I hiding?
I'm an addict, Scott. I'm helping. Thanks. Thought about that on the long drive down here. All right. So, I kind of thought this was a weird topic when I got it, but anyway, I'll do my best. Thanks, Suzanne, for a great share, great message, and so yeah, I'm an addict, Scott, and I have been in service, my sponsor, Big John W. I got clean in Central Maryland area, Narcotics Anonymous. I still live in that area. My home group is the HAL group. We meet Saturday nights at 7 o'clock at St. Mary's Church and School. Right now we're virtual. That's the only home group I've had. I've had one home group since I've been clean. And that was because I was so scared of, like, Saturday night. You know, like, what the fuck am I going to do Saturday night? So I got a home group Saturday night, and then we'd all go out to eat, and then the next thing I knew, it was, like, late, you know. So my sponsor, who's now deceased, John W., he was really involved in H&I. And John was like about 6'7", and he weighed about 300 pounds. And so when John gave you a suggestion, it was like more than a suggestion. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't go like, no, I don't want to do that. It would be like, okay. And so I had like about 4 months clean, and he said, he called me up and said, what are you doing Sunday night? I said, nothing. He said, okay, I'll pick you up at 6:30. And I said, okay, where are we going? And he said, I'm taking you to H&I. And I said, well, you got to have 6 months to join H&I, and I've only got 4 months. And he said, I don't really give a shit about that. I'm picking you up and taking you to H&I, you know? And I was like, okay, you know? And so what he wanted to do was to get me involved in service and to see how it worked before I was, so I'd be comfortable, like when it was time to get a position there. And other than 2 years in my recovery, I've had an H&I position my entire time, because that's how I got the message of Narcotics Anonymous, through H&I. So that service work, you know, that service position, whatever they have been, means a lot to me, and hopefully I'm helping in that position to carry the message, because I know that for me, it changed my life. You know, when I got clean, I didn't have any experience with recovery. I didn't have any experience with Narcotics Anonymous. I had experience with like a methadone program and shooting a bunch of coke, but not shooting a whole lot of dope. So that was like doing good. You know what I mean? And that was recovery, right? I didn't call it recovery, but I was like, well, I'm not shooting dope, but I'm spending more money shooting all this coke, so it really didn't work out that well, come to think of it. But I hadn't been to like NA except for like one meeting. My first meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, my girlfriend and I had been up for like 3 days getting high, and she and peeking out windows and flushing shit down toilets and all that kind of stuff. And she just said, like, I can't take this anymore. I need to go to a meeting. Come on. And I was like, okay. And so we went to a meeting, and I heard, like, if you have any drugs or paraphernalia, go outside and stash them and come back in my pocket full of drugs and paraphernalia. There's no fucking way I'm getting up after hearing that and walking out the door, you know what I mean? So I'm sitting there in this meeting I didn't really want to be in. I'm like, oh, I'm high as shit. And I'm all freaked out because I got all this stuff. And so the person trying to share, and I have no idea what they said. My girlfriend Marcia raises her hand and says, "Me and my boyfriend Scott, we've been shooting dope and doing this and doing that for the last 3 days, and it's just driving me crazy, and I need to get clean, we need change." I'm sitting there going, like, why the fuck are you dragging me in this, you know? Like, I don't want to be here in the first place. And I got pockets full of drugs, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. And so the meeting ends, and I just haul ass outside, and of course, you know, what we do in NA, all these people came up to her, and, hey, give me your phone number, and thanks for sharing, and blah, 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 blah. And we get back in the car, and she goes, "Oh, I feel so much better now. Let's go home and finish up the dope." And I was just like... So why did we come here, you know, just to like put this shit on hold for 2 hours, you know? So that was my experience with NA. It was like, well, this thing doesn't fucking work, you know what I mean? And so I had no experience. And so I went to prison for a long time, and I got out of prison and I started using again. And my parole officer gave me a choice to either go to detox and treatment or go back to prison. So I chose detox and treatment. Seems like a pretty simple choice. Although, when he first put it to me, I said, well, can I go home and think about it? You know? Because, like, going back to prison, going to prison scared me. Going back to prison didn't scare me because I had already spent 6.5 years there. I, like, knew what to do. You know what I mean? Going to treatment scared the shit out of me because I had never done it. So I went to treatment. H&I came in. They brought a meeting. The guy that came in to lead the meeting was a guy that I used to sell drugs to. Was a guy that spent 2.5 years in prison with me in Lexington, Kentucky. We got high all the time in prison. He got out of jail. I did another like 3 years. I'm from Baltimore. I went to this detox like way out in the far corner of like Montgomery County, which is way far away. I didn't know where the hell I was. He was from D.C. I didn't know what he was doing there. But anyway, when I saw him, you know, it was like the light came on. Because, like I said, I had no experience with Narcotics Anonymous. I had no experience with recovery. I had no experience with anything except that we went to a meeting and then we got home and got high. And so, and this guy, there was one time when I was with him, we were out of money, we were out of everything. He said, give me a ride of the car. He said, give me a ride to my mom's house. He got out of the car, he went inside, he put a gun to his mother's head, he robbed her of all her money, he came back in the car, he said, let's go get high. You know? So I knew, like, what this guy's story was. You know what I mean? Like, you could tell me you were clean, like those people in that meeting that said they were clean. Like, I didn't fucking believe them because we went and got high. You know what I mean? But I knew this guy. And so what I knew was, I didn't know this right away, but I knew this in time, was that the God of my understanding put Butch in there to lead that meeting so I could see that this program works, because I had no faith and I had no belief and I had no, you know, no other way to think that this program works. And so what he said to me, again, you know, I haven't been to a meeting. Close up the meeting. Can we have a moment of silence for the addicts still suffering? Followed by the serenity prayer. And after the meeting ended, he said, you know what, Scott, he had 2.5 years clean. He said, in the last 2.5 years, every meeting I've been to, in that moment of silence, I've said a prayer that you would find the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous. And I was like, well, fuck, I haven't thought about you at all, you know? That was my first thought. First thought wrong. That's how I think. My second thought was that, man, any program that'll turn a guy putting a gun to his mother's head to saying a prayer for a suffering addict, I'm in. Now, I haven't used since. Like Suzanne, relapse is not in my story. And the meaningfulness of that to me, because I really believe that if he hadn't come and led that meeting, that there was no way I'd be clean. I might be clean today, but I wouldn't have the same clean date. There's no doubt in my mind, you know? So I owe my life, and I owe this second stage of my life that I've been clean to Narcotics Anonymous. And the least I can do is be of service to Narcotics Anonymous. It's the least I can do. You know, the most I can do is, you know, pray, go to meetings, work steps, don't use a day at a time, and help somebody else. You know, the least I can do is when something needs to be done or I'm asked to do something in NA is to do it. And, you know, I've had a lot of service positions in Narcotics Anonymous. I currently have like 2 H&I positions, which is easy because they're on the virtual platform. I've got a regional position, and I've got a position at my home group, which is virtual, that I have to do tonight. I'm the facilitator. And none of that gets in the way. None of that, you know, hides me from, like, my recovery, because it's manageable. But how it's helped is service work has helped me in my life. Because prior to coming to Narcotics Anonymous, I got clean in 1993. The last job that I had was in 1982. So, you know, now 6.5 years of that was like prison time, but, you know, I mean, I didn't have a whole lot of work history. I didn't have a lot of marketable skills. I did have like an import-export business. Mostly import. You know, I was a pretty good salesman. You know, I knew the metric system. Right? I knew like that kind of stuff. But like real work experience, I was horrible with. And haven't told this old chestnut in a while, Kurt, but when I was incarcerated, I did federal time. I don't know if anybody here has had the pleasure of doing federal time, but you don't just like sit in your cell, like they give you jobs. And federal prisons are always like fucking way, way, way overcrowded, so they like make up jobs, right? But some jobs, they have factory jobs. I mean, people like go to work 8 hours a day and they build furniture that is used in federal government office buildings and stuff. So we had a job that after the evening count cleared, there was a crew of us that went out and buffed and cleaned the floor in front of the chapel every night because the priest wanted his floor nice and shiny, right? So you know, I mean, other people, like I say, they're working like 8 hours a day, they're doing all this stuff. We go out and we buff a floor. So my job wasn't to buff the floor. My job was to hold the cord of the buff while a guy buffed the floor. I got fired. Now, the bar to hold a job in prison isn't like real fucking high. You know what I'm saying? So that was like my work ethic, getting clean. And what service work taught me was the whatever I was doing to like be on time, was to do whatever job was required. You know, I mean, back then you could smoke in meetings and stuff, and back then, I don't hear this so much anymore, but back then they used to say, we want to leave the room better than it was when we got here. And we met in the basement of this church where they had a school, like an elementary school, and the fucking chairs were like these little kiddie chairs, right? So everybody's sitting around in these little kiddie chairs, sitting like this. So that was kind of cool, you know what I mean? Because didn't matter how much clean time you had, everybody was like the same, you know, looking stupid. And it was a cement floor, and so my job was to like mop the floor. Now I couldn't even fucking hold a cord to a buffer. Now I'm mopping the floor, and in the beginning I was like, man, fuck this, you know, they need to find somebody else and all this, and John was like, mop the fucking floor, okay. So then I took like pride in that, you know what I mean? I took pride in my in work. And I was there every week, and you know, and then I had different jobs, and I had different other things, and like area service, and H&I, where you had a commitment, you did it. It wasn't like, well, I want to go to Joe's anniversary. It was like, no, you got a fucking commitment tonight at the rehab. And that's more important than Joe's anniversary. And if Joe doesn't understand that, then fuck him. You know? For real. Right? If he doesn't get that, you know, so I was just like, okay. And so all of those things that I learned in service work, about being responsible, about being on time, about doing my job, about, you know, making reports, about, you know, kind of like stuff that like Suzanne was talking about. You know, I didn't have any background in any of that. Then when I got like a job to actually like make money so I could do some things, all of those things came in very, very handy. You know, and allowed me to hold a job for a long time, allowed me to advance in that job, gave me some other skills to start some businesses of my own, which failed, but you know, at least, you know, you people in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, believed in me and wanted to help me in my recovery, and allowed me to you know, live out my dreams, to do some stuff that I wouldn't have done. And the people that I've met along the way in service, a lot of the people that I met along the way, like in the beginning in service, are still clean. And a lot of them are still in service. And that means a lot, you know what I mean? I mean, look around, you know what I mean? And the people, because, you know, I was also told, like, to stick with the winners, you know what I mean? And it's like, well, how do I know who's a winner? And people said, the people in service. Because they care. And they're here, and they're giving their time. And, you know, there was a, you know, there was certainly time early on in my recovery where I had like a million service positions, but I had like a sponsor that was like, you know, you should probably slow down on some of those things. I never really felt like I was hiding from my recovery, although I'm not the, you know, I mean, I'm not the greatest step worker in the world either, Suzanne. You know, in the pandemic, I started writing on a step, and that's where it stayed. That's where it is. I started. You know? And I haven't finished. I'm a good starter. I'm a lousy finisher. You know? But my sponsor's given me some like good suggestions and stuff about just, you know, don't look at it like I've got to bang this all out in a weekend. Just try to do a little bit, you know, a little bit a day. If you can't do a little bit a day, do a little bit a week. Just, you know, keep trying to keep moving forward. You know, the help that I've gotten myself by doing service work is immeasurable. You know, if we go into like, you know, in an H&I meeting and I share that story of what Butch did for me, you know, maybe it'll touch somebody that's in there. You know what I mean? Maybe that's just like what they need to hear. Maybe not. You know, I do know that in, you know, the 27 years that I've been clean, and I've given out my phone number probably 1,000 times, I might have gotten 10 phone calls. You know, and that can feel kind of discouraging. But, you know, the fact of the matter is that those were 10 people that reached out. And maybe they're still clean today. I know a couple of them are. You know, a guy last night, I went to like a live meeting last night. There's only a couple of live meetings in the area that we're at. And a guy last night reminded me, like when he was in treatment, that I came in and shared my story. And it really resonated with him, and he thanked me for that, you know. And I'd forgotten all about it. He was like, "Yeah, I met you at this, you know, treatment center when you came in, and did that." And so, you know, any time that we're of service to Narcotics Anonymous, we have the opportunity to maybe touch the life of another addict. You know, whether it's good or bad. You know, sometimes it can be like, you touch the life of an addict, and he's like, "Man, this guy's really fucked up." You know what I mean? I'm glad. You know, I'm. You know, I can't relate to the kind of shit that he did. But then, you know, I try to tell them. You know, when I tell my story, it's like, you know, if you haven't done the stuff that I've done, just understand that if you keep using, you might. And you don't have to. You know, a wise man learns from others. Be a wise man. Don't have to sit there and go, "Well, if I do all that shit, maybe I'll come back to recovery." You know what I mean? Know that, you know, if this person did this and you haven't done it yet and they've gotten clean, then maybe, you know, you've got a chance. You know, I mean, I met this one gal who, you know, got clean because she got a B on her on a collegiate exam. And I was just like, "What the fuck?" You know? She said, "I've never gotten a B in my life. I've been an A student my entire life. And I got a B, and I'm smoking a whole lot of pot and taking ecstasy And that's got to be the reason. So I came to NA, and I'm like, and my first thought wrong. I was like, what the fuck, you know? My second thought, the right thought was, you're a hell of a lot smarter than me, you know? I wish I would have fucking got here because I got a B on a test, you know? Could have saved myself a lot of trouble. But, you know, the trouble that I got in is the story that I have. The story that I have is, you know, today I've been clean as long as I used, which is incredible. You know, it's incredible. I used for 27 years. I've been clean for 27 years. And when I first got clean, I never, ever, 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 ever thought like that, something like that would be possible. But, you know, through the God of my understanding, through the program in Narcotics Anonymous, and through service work, that's happened. If it can happen to me, it can happen to everybody. Thanks, let me share.
Guys, I want to thank Suzanne and Scott for a great message. All right, we have a nice way of closing. God, grant me strength to accept the things I cannot change, to understand the things I can, and with those who know the